We'll be reading today from 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. The book of 1 Corinthians chapter 4, let's begin reading in verse 6. Paul said, "And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that you might learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you be puffed up for one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now, if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? Now ye are full, now ye are rich. You have reigned as kings without us, and I would to God ye did reign, that we might also reign with you." In verse 6, Paul said that he had figuratively transferred these things to these people. The New King James says, "I have figuratively transferred to myself and Apollos these things." The question is, what things? What are these things that Paul says that he had in a figure or had figuratively transferred to himself and Apollos? It appears that what Paul is talking about is the illustrations that he's been using about preachers. Going back into chapter 3, you'll remember that he likened the work of preaching to farming. In chapter 3, verse 6, he said, "I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." And so in verses 6 through the first part of verse 9, he talks about the work of the gospel, the work of preaching the gospel, which is the work of preachers and ministers in particular, as being like planting seed and harvesting the crop. And then he used another illustration beginning in chapter 3, verse 9, in the last part, because he says that you are God's building. And he goes on to say that he himself was a wise master builder. So now the illustration is building a building, building a house or some other structure. So this kind of construction is very similar to, and it's an apt illustration of building the church, because you work in preaching and teaching the gospel, you convert souls and you build up the souls that are already saved. That is like building a house or building a building. And then in chapter 4, verse 1, he talks about the fact that they were ministers, which means that they were servants. And so now the illustration is serving. That's what Paul was. That's what Apollos was. That's what Peter was. They were in the business of serving people by ministering the gospel to them. Now, back in those days, those people were more familiar with servants than we are. There were more servants, and they were more common in households than they are in our culture. So when Paul said that they were ministers, when Paul explained that they were just servants, these people could understand that illustration. And then the fourth illustration is the one that we just finished with in the last lesson, and that is that as ministers of Christ, they were stewards. And stewards are managers. And so the illustration is, just as a steward or a manager manages the business of someone else, the apostles of Christ and these other preachers managed the business of teaching and preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so what Paul is saying here is that I have applied these illustrations in normal everyday life to our work as preachers. And I believe that's what he's talking about here when he says, "And these things," that is, these illustrations, brethren, "I have in a figure," that is, in a figurative sense, in a figurative way of speaking, "transferred to myself and to Apollos." And he said, "I did that for a reason. The reason that I brought these illustrations up is to teach you Christians not to think of men above that which is written." Not to put men on too high of a pedestal. Not to glory in men and not to give men too much praise. You'll notice in the King James Version, that the words of men are in italics. That means there are no words in the original for those words, and the King James Version translators supplied those words because they thought that it would help us to understand the thought better. And so if you read it very literally, it will say that you might learn in us not to think above that which is written. But we might say this also, that the King James Version translators appeared to have the right idea because the context is about the very thing that they're trying to indicate. Don't think above what is written, and don't be puffed up for one against another. So what he's saying then is don't put men on too high of a pedestal, and also don't be arrogant toward each other. Don't put these preachers up too highly, and don't be puffed up against one another. And of course, either one of those can certainly lead to or cause the other. If people put preachers up on too high of a pedestal, that tends to rub off on them, and they become prideful toward each other. And on the other hand, if people are prideful toward each other, they tend to put men on too high of a pedestal because they want somebody that is like the attitude that they have. And notice that expression, puffed up. These people at Corinth were puffed up. As a matter of fact, these words, puffed up, come from one particular word in the original that is used 7 times in the New Testament. And 6 out of 7 times in the New Testament, when you read the words puffed up, you will read them in the book of 1 Corinthians. So this is 1 time out of 6 that Paul is going to tell these people not to be puffed up. There was definitely a problem with arrogance in the church at Corinth. They were definitely prideful. And Paul is trying to get them out of that kind of prideful attitude by what he's saying here. And he has to be very direct about this. He can't beat around the bush. He cannot be very general about this. And he certainly cannot put out some kind of vague idea about being prideful. He's telling these people, you don't need to be prideful and puffed up against each other. But I want to notice this expression even more, and that is that you might learn in us not to think of men above what is written. You see, they were thinking of Paul and Apollos and Peter above what they should have, above what was written. Well, that begs the question, what is written in the Scriptures about the nature of man that we're not to go beyond? Well, here are just a few things. I think that at least these things would be involved in what the Bible says about man. In Ecclesiastes 7, verse 20, the Bible says that there is not a just man upon earth that doeth good and sinneth not. So Ecclesiastes 7, verse 20 says that nobody is sinless. In Jeremiah 17, verse 9, the Bible says that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? In Psalm 39, verse 5, the Bible says, verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity, that is, emptiness. So when you look at those scriptures and you start thinking of men in a way that does not fit with those passages, when you start putting too much emphasis on man, then you have gone above what is written. And especially, you go above what is written about man. And those are just a few examples. And even though we find that Paul, in the context, is talking about attitudes toward men, it still is a great Bible doctrine. That is, to stay with what is written. Don't go above what is written in any way. Don't go beyond the Bible. Just stay with what it says. If it's wrong to go beyond the Bible, if it's wrong to go above and beyond what is written about men, then it's wrong to go above and beyond the Bible in many other things as well. So what we find in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 6, is part of this great Bible principle not to transgress the authority of God. In 2 John 9, the Bible says, whoever transgresses, that is, goes beyond and abides not in the doctrine of Christ, has not God. That's the idea that we're looking at here in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. Now, Paul, in verse 7, has some pointed questions for these proud Corinthians. Notice what he asked them in verse 7. He says, "For who makes you to differ from another?" Who makes you different from somebody else? Now, these people saw themselves as being different in a superior kind of way. Not different in the sense of being odd, and certainly not different in the sense of being inferior or beneath others. They saw themselves as being different from other people, even in the congregation, in the sense of being above them and better than them. And what we find is that that came out in different ways. You had rich people in the church at Corinth who were shaming the poor people in the congregation. You had some people who could speak in tongues in the congregation, and they wanted to show out. They somehow saw themselves as being above even people who had other spiritual gifts. So what Paul is saying is, if you do have an advantage over somebody else, let's say that you have more money than somebody else. Let's say that you have more ability than someone else. Let's say that in the church at Corinth, here is a person who has more spiritual gifts than perhaps others do. Paul's question is, who made you different from those other people? If you know more, or if you have more, where did that advantage come from? It didn't come from you, so that means that you have no reason to be prideful about it. His second question is, what do you have that you didn't receive? What hast thou that thou didst not receive? These people had material blessings. Some of these people were rich, as we said. Some of these people had spiritual gifts. But this is a good question for any of us. What do you have that you did not receive? These people tended to be like a lot of individuals, and that is, they thought that they were the source of their blessings, or at least some of their advantages and their abilities. But Paul said, when you really think about this, and this is, again, a good question, a great question for all of us to consider, whatever you have right now, name one thing that you have that you were not given, that you did not receive. And when you say, well, I made this, or I work for that, still, who gave you the circumstances, who gave you the opportunity, and who gave you the health to pursue those things, who gave you the life that you have to do those things and to acquire those things? So, like the Bible says in Deuteronomy chapter 8, when you've worked and you've accumulated things in life, beware lest your heart be lifted up and you say, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth, but thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. That's Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18. And so Paul's question is, if you received what you have, then why do you glory as if you did not receive it? What he's saying is, if you received what you have, and you're not the source of your blessings, then why be proud and act like you didn't? Why be arrogant and act like you're the source of the good things that you have? Because that's just not true. This is what he continues to talk about if you'll look again at verse 8. Now you are full. He's talking to these Corinthian Christians. He says, you are full, you are rich, and you have reigned as kings without us. That is, in an earthly sense. Because of your prosperity, you've reigned like kings. And Paul said, I would to God, that is, I wish that you did reign, truly, in a spiritual sense, so that we might also reign with you. Paul says, I'm not so much concerned about your material condition, I'm concerned about your spiritual state, and that's what he's going to continue to teach these people in 1 Corinthians chapter 4.